Hi, I'm Camille Warrington. I'm a senior research fellow at the University of Bedfordshire in the Safer Young Lives Research Centre. I suppose I'll start by saying that I'm not an expert in trauma and trauma-informed approaches, but the nature of my research has meant inevitably it become an important kind of focus and consideration. At its most basic, it's about starting from an understanding of the impact of trauma, being able to kind of identify its impact on individuals and communities that we work with. It's thinking about then how do we work in ways that take heed of that and avoid kind of re-traumatization. I think the starting point is not being kind of overwhelmed and intimidated by the language of trauma-informed thinking and approaches, because actually the workers and young people themselves probably already have a lot of the kind of knowledge and sensitivities around these issues just from the work they do. They may not necessarily call it trauma-informed approaches, but their awareness of the issues that young people are facing, particularly around violence, means that they, you know, they have some of that kind of knowledge already. There's something about starting not from an overconfidence, but from feeling like, yes, I can do this. You know, as a youth worker, you've got the capacity to do this and work well. There is some additional thinking to take on board. And I think it starts from thinking about, like, how do we create safety within our research processes, both physical safety, which sometimes can be more complex than we might initially think. It's not necessarily just about the space in which a research interaction takes place, but it's also about the spaces that people walk out into and live in after their research interaction as well. Probably more significantly, it's about fostering psychological safety within our research interactions and recognizing the ways that taking part in research can unsettle our sense of well-being and safety, and thinking about how can we do everything possible to ensure that we kind of protect that and nurture that kind of and create this as a safe space. There's like various things I think that go into that. None of them are rocket science. I think it's more a commitment to kind of really strong reflective practice in the time and kind of working cultures that support that.
In your experience, you know, have you discovered any sort of strategies for sort of holding those things in mind?
I think there's something about recognizing this as an ongoing process at every step of the way. And it's not something I think one person can ever think of and plan for themselves. It's through conversations with workers, the researchers and young people themselves that we can kind of almost like safety plan our research. Sometimes I've kind of done exercises with young people or young peer researchers where we thought, what would the world's worst scenario be? What could go possibly wrong? And then worked back from there to think, how can we make sure that that doesn't happen? I think I've learned from young people, I've learned from doing things wrong, and also recognizing you won't anticipate everything. And no project that I've done have I ever planned for or anticipated everything that's come up. And therefore having in place a structure for ongoing reflective practice. You know, I'm a bit wary about using the word risk too much, but I think having some sort of kind of register of risk that you can keep updating and say, oh, actually, we hadn't considered that. Also kind of paying attention and noticing if something doesn't feel right, if we're doing group work and something feels a bit uncomfortable, not kind of panicking or thinking, oh, we shouldn't have done that, but just attending to that and thinking, what was going on there? What was going on for me? What might be going on for some young people? And what can we learn from that? Can we design our processes slightly differently? And there's lots of little things. And then I think there's some really obvious things as well, like not asking, you know, not ever assuming people should have to talk directly about experiences of violence or other forms of trauma, and not putting them in a position where that's an expectation, even an unsaid expectation. We know one of the things with violence is we know people are really curious about it. Sometimes that curiosity can actually feel quite intrusive and inappropriate. I've experienced that from very senior policymakers asking young people inappropriate questions, and I've seen it from kind of clumsy youth work as well. And so it's thinking about how do we make sure there's no pressure for young people to have to speak directly about their personal experiences while being able to contribute still and draw on those experiences and the expertise that comes from that. That doesn't mean to say some people won't want to talk about their experiences, but it's just making sure that that's their choice. That's probably alongside thinking about safety, that's the other big principle that I think is really important. It's like, how do we maximize and facilitate participants' sense of control and sense of choice throughout the process?
I just wonder, have you supported peer researchers to interview other young people on sensitive issues?
We're doing some peer research at the moment. Interesting, it's research about transitions from being somebody who uses services to somebody adopting a different role, and they're interviewing one another about that. I think it's not underestimating the support that needs put around it, and also just thinking about, yeah, who's holding the kind of risk, as it were. There's something I think that's like almost the trickiest issue in all of that is this kind of not wanting to be risk averse. but also not wanting to be gung-ho or overlooking the significance of the risk. So it's a really delicate balance. And it's also part of that is about recognizing the benefits of participation in research. So there's this constantly balance, and there's no black and white line. It can feel a bit nerve-wracking sometimes walking that, but that's why I think decision making has to be shared, responsibility has to be shared, and somebody with confidence to make decisions and hold risk has to have a role in that. I think with peer research, with all your work, is about the importance of preparing them and training them. We did some interview training. We got them to kind of develop their own kind of risk register, thinking about all the things they were nervous about, lots of which were about causing distress and upset or somebody responding angrily, and then just working through what they could do to prevent it, what they could do in the moment if they saw it and recognized it, and what we could do afterwards as well. And actually that gave them a lot of confidence because they thought that through. And then also I think the debriefing to peer researchers and recognizing also if they have quite similar or shared experiences, there's real capacity for the process of collecting other people's experience, stories, expertise to have quite a significant impact. Yeah. And I guess also thinking, are there some topics, subjects where peer research might be quite tricky and actually the risk might be too significant? So thinking of an example, quite a number of years ago now, we did a project on gang-associated sexual violence. We considered a peer research model for the interviews, and it was decided that actually there was too much risk involved and it wasn't appropriate because given what we know about some of the kind of the dynamics associated with those things. And so what we did instead was build a parallel process, a creative communication process where we worked with peer filmmakers and worked collectively to develop some films that responded to the research. So there's still a really key place for peer leadership and young people's voice and influence on this topic, but the kind of traditional research model doesn't feel like it will work, and it wouldn't be fair.
So I'm hearing something there also about how methods are really part of the picture here. Methods are just not this abstract thing that you do that's separate from everything else, but they're really wrapped up with, you know, concerns and considerations about how it is to work with issues like this.
Yeah, thinking we actually have another peer research project that's going on with a partner project in Albania at the moment. I think a couple of things that one of the advantages of that project is it's been relatively long term. So they've worked together, albeit online, with our colleague and a translator for certainly through most of this year. So about 10 months before they've gone out and they're actually going to be doing a survey. So they've had a long time preparing. Now, not everyone might have that luxury, and that's okay. But it's thinking about, let's be modest in our hopes and expectations, because if we acknowledge that preparation, all the support around it is important, we've got to then think about how much time do we have available for the data collection. And if that's more limited, let's be modest in our ambitions, but do it well and do it safely. So there's something there about methods. And I also think, yeah, I think like one of the really successful activities they did there as a group was some collage activity. So developing collages to respond to an issue, to share their experiences, it felt like a really safe way. They weren't directly asking each other questions, but they were collectively producing knowledge on an understanding of the issues. So I think, yeah, there is, and I think actually distancing techniques is something that can be implemented in lots of different methods. So even in the way we ask questions, sometimes we've asked questions in the third person, and we'll say, what would it be like for another young person experiencing this, or created a character and read a little story about a character and said, what's it like for Sangeeta to, you know, experience this? Let's think about what would be helpful for Sangeeta. It's just created again a little bit of space and safety around them kind of talking about personal experiences. And also, as we know, creative methods are really a really good way of allowing us to maybe think and reflect quite deeply in a way that allows some sort of safety and distance, because maybe we're not relying solely on kind of verbal methods as well. And it might feel safe to talk about a picture we've created, a collage we've created, and why we've made choices on it in a way that it wouldn't feel safe to answer direct questions about how we feel about a topic. So yeah, I think that's a really helpful point about methods.
I think those are great examples that illustrate really nicely.
The skills and experience that lots of workers have are transferable. They'll be thinking about these things naturally. if they're thinking about these topics. So it's just about kind of building and scaffolding on that.
Thanks ever so much, Camille, for spending the time with us this morning and for those really kind of insightful principles and the practices.
Yeah, really great to hear about your experiences. Thanks, Camille.